Well, good morning, everybody. I'm Peter Marcello, the chair for this session, and I'm glad you're here because I think the management of colorectal polyps is something that's near and dear to our hearts. You know, we started with endoscopy, and we continue to do endoscopy. And if you're not here to learn about management of polyps, you're in the wrong session. I also want to remind you a couple things, and I'll do it myself. Can we just put the phones on silence now, just so I don't have to, like, you know, have security escort you out? And please fill out your evaluations and let us know. You know, we're happy to change the topics based upon your input. So your input is really important to us. And I see some friendly faces, and we look forward to having this session be informative for you and for us, and at times interactive. I think after each talk, I'll ask if people have questions, because it's always like we'll do them at the end and never quite happens. So after each one, if you have a burning question, please ask it right then and there. And you can raise your hand up. I think we're small enough room that we can get to the questions if you can't get to the microphone. I'm going to introduce Sang Lee, who's my co-moderator. Sang, I'm going to have you introduce Emery for the first talk in just a second. The goal of this is for us to provide you information about how to manage polyps. We're not going to talk about indications for screening. We're not going to talk about changes in guidelines, although it's interesting to hear what the American Cancer Society says about moving the age down to 45. I think we're all here because we take care of polyps. How many of you do colonoscopy at least one day a week? Yes. All right. How many of you do laparoscopy? It's going to be about everybody. Yes. How many of you can get an endoscope in the OR easily? It's going to be wow. How about CO2 in the OR? Half, more than half. Phenomenal. That every year it goes up and up, and that's what you're going to need when we talk about how we're going to manage these polyps. So to start us off, I'll have Sang introduce the first speaker.
I'd like to introduce Emery Gorgon from Cleveland Clinic. Emery probably has done more advanced endoscopy, ESD, than anybody, any of us in surgery. He's going to talk to us about endoscopic imaging and retraction system. What do you see? Emery.
Thank you very much, Sang, and thank you, Peter, for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be here, and it's a very important topic, obviously, for all of us, and for especially for us surgeons, because it's very important to, as surgeons, to attack and tackle these difficult polyps so we don't have to remove colons unnecessarily. We know that colons are, removing colectomies are associated with morbidities and mortalities, and in this day and age, also healthcare cost is a great, you know, extremely important issue. So if you can minimize surgery, that would be ideal. I'm trying to.
Emery, step this way.
Okay.
Who's this? This is Amanda's going to help us here. You know, we all need help. Thank you, Amanda.
So there are options for resection, in terms of resection, how we can remove them. We're going to talk about that, but you know, they gave me a really two different topics, actually. First, how we image them, how we recognize them and decide what type of resection is the best. And the other one is a little bit different. We're going to shift gear there, the retraction system, new platforms. So these are my disclosures. When we deal with a polyp, tough polyps or colonic lesions, they can be very various how they look morphologically. And, you know, it's not uncommon we see something like this, like carpeted lesion, very, you know, large surface area. How can we resect that? What type of approach we can use? We have been getting really good at endoscopic resection techniques, and they include, like, for example, EMR, endoscopic mucosal resection, which is just submucosal injection of fluid and removing these in piecemeal, if you will, is snaring technique. But you really can get really huge areas, large areas with that. The problem with that is you cannot get a good specimen, and, you know, none of us like to get it from pathology the answer suspicious for invasive cancer, and that's exactly what we're trying to avoid. That's why ESD is another alternative where you can really see, you know, go outside the lesion. You can recognize the borders of the lesion and go outside of it and do like surgical principle cuttings and getting into the plane. and remove a lesion like you see in the right lower quadrant, like in an M-block fashion. And we have gone made a lot of advancements in terms of fluid injections, different FDA-approved fluids. We have those. We didn't have any of these like a few years back. Now we do have these. And then we have different type of instruments. And also we have new platforms which we will be discussing down the road. But at the end of the day, ESD is certainly technically demanding, challenging, and takes longer, and the risks are higher in terms of perforation and possibly even bleeding, although that can be argued. But regardless, you know, when we get to see these lesions, so when should we choose EMR? When should we go ESD? Or just do a simple piecemeal excision with snare. So that's what the diagnostic or imaging of the polyp means. So we really need to, as surgeons, better recognize the lesion so we can determine which way we can go. For example, for a lesion in the left upper, looks like completely benign lesion, there's not necessarily a need to spend hours to do ESD for this. But as we go further, you know, there's some lesions that are more laterally spreading, more non-granular surface, which we define as, which we will talk a little bit more, so we can decide what to do. Or even lesions like in this picture, more really centrally depressed, and you know, the pit patterns, the surface appearance is a little bit more suspicious. So how can we categorize those so we can be more precise? So it's not easy, you know, it's tough. So can we have a judgment just by looking at it? How? But does that really predict the submucosal invasion risk? Really, that's what it comes down to, the prediction of submucosal invasive cancer, and that should be an integral part of our endoscopic evaluation. We are not that good, we need to admit. As surgeons, we don't know this much. Gastroenterologists may be a little better, but they don't know what to do with that information down the road. So we can and we should combine these two skills. So, sorry if there are any gastroenterologists in the room. So lesions with a high risk submucosal invasive cancer, of course, require a careful decision making so we can choose the best therapeutic modality and then optimize the outcomes for our patients. So we have some tools for these, like, for example, PARIS, SENO, CUDA, or NIS, or NICE classification techniques or tools. I'm going to concentrate. We got to start slow. I'm going to concentrate on these two, which are more widely used. But for morphology also, we need to get some terminologies straight here. There is other terms that we need to, as surgeons, get familiar with. For example, LSD. You might see that from your GI colleagues, but we're not so much familiar with that, which is laterally spreading tumors. That means more like, you know, flat polyps that are laterally spreading, and then they subclassify these granular or non-granular. So what granular means is more like a cauliflower, a little bit more budding, you know, extending, fungating, if you will. And these are actually tend to be a little bit more less invasive, more benign than non-granular one. They are more flat and can be depressed. These are actually known to be more invasive. But these are not really very, very accurate, predictive of submucosal invasion, but that can give you further ideas. But more than that, more precise definitions, classifications are, for example, with PARIS, which also uses the morphology, different than the last slide I showed. But here it's more classified, for example, as these numbers. But really, I'd like you to concentrate on the second and third column, as you see, and this is also very important from histology perspective, as you know, muscularis mucosa here. And then down here is the submucosa. So anything that doesn't go below this line is non-invasive cancer. It's what also referred as intramucosal carcinoma or in situ carcinoma, which is same almost identical thing to say high-grade dysplasia. But if it goes down to the submucosa, that's when invasive cancer we're talking about. And as you see here, as lesions get flatter, not necessarily these protruding ones or granular ones, but when it gets down this way and down sunken in, deeply puckered in, or even excavated, you know, these are the high-risk lesions. You know, when you look at them and see very flat, excavated, these are risky lesions. It's a red flag. So this is really what Paris classification talks about. There are some numbers. You don't need to necessarily remember these, but these are some tools or hints that we need to keep in mind. So Kuro is defined these like in early 1990s, and this is an analysis used to predict the histology based on the microarchitecture of the pits and epithelial crest. So this is now different than the Paris. This is more like the surface pit pattern, which is a little bit different, and I'm going to show that too. The previous one was more morphology and how puckered it is. But this one and the previous Paris is an international consortium roundtable. That's how the definition came up with. Kudo, this is obviously a Japanese gastroenterologist, and what Kudo pattern helps us is there are five types like this, you know, round pit, obviously normal mucosa, or like a little bit like these star asteroid pits. These are also more like hyperplastic or sessile serrated, but when it comes down to type three, like these gyrus type of regular pit features that we are all familiar with, as you see here, which is more like tubular villus. When it gets really down here irregular, when you cannot really follow these gyruses or these dendritic structures, then it gets really scary. That's when we talk about invasive, because these pit patterns are becoming to be disorganized. They are not organized anymore. You cannot recognize them as shown here. And here, this is, you see it in the real world. See how this is? And this is, we know, we see this every day, but we just don't know how to call it. So we, looking at our institution now, actually.
Emery, go back one. So the one on the bottom is a five. Why is that a five?
So there is no, the pit pattern, as you see here on this one, is very organized, dendritic, gyrus, but that regular organized structure is changed, and you can't even follow the grooves. The organized structure is lost. So that's an indication of invasion, submucosal invasion. And there are studies showing that the Kudo pattern correlates with the final pathology in terms of submucosal invasion and cancer. So it's almost, some studies say up to 97-98%.
So if you see a five, we're not thinking about an endoscopic removal?
No, unless it's mobile, you know, there are other features maybe, but, you know, definitely not. Or a patient is really high risk for operative high risk and so forth, but typically no.
Okay.
So we don't know also how these patterns correlate with our postoperative or in the North American population. These are studies mainly done in the Asian countries, and this is a study we doing right now at our hospital. So basically then in practical terms, really when you look at it, something like this, you can really do EMR, you know, very granular, you know, flat, no signs of any suspicion. Even here, maybe this one gets a little risky. It still doesn't look like invasive. You can do probably a submucosal EST. This would be a good EST case, so you can get it end-blocked, this one in the middle, and definitely rule out any high-grade dysplasia. Or even if it's a T1, if it's SM1, which is the upper third of the submucosal invasion, then you can. There are practically no lymph nodes or lymphatic drainage network in the upper third of the submucosa, so you can really don't need to do any further surgeries. But when you see something like this, this is clear cut, you know, again, type 5, Kudo, risk of invasion is high, and this is something that should be referred to surgery. So this is pit pattern, microvasculature, so you look at it, you know, we shouldn't be intimidated by that. It's less than intimidating in a TV control. So here we're gonna shift a little bit the gear. So we asked more technical aspects. When we have these lesions, we decided to remove them, EST, let's say, and how are we gonna use retraction? It's tough because we, feel ourselves like rhinoceros, just operating without traction and counter-traction. So we got to have some traction built into the system, built into our techniques. And that's more so, if you will, bring surgical principles in endoluminally. And they are now, we're going to talk about like the Cleveland method, we recently published this, and then it's a couple other platforms that are available right now, and one of my colleagues will be talking about more about dilumen as well. I'm going to just touch on that. That's all. This is a technique we recently published at the American College of Gastroenterologists meeting, which is was an 83-year-old woman with a flat lesion in the right colon, ascending colon. And they, as you see now, like we discussed, it's a laterally spreading tumor, non-granular, had some features that could be high-grade dysplasia in the biopsy. Someone biopsied it. By the way, also, it's best not these lesions biopsied by your gastroenterologist before, because they, any biopsy or touch to the lesion makes it scar more and makes the submucosal dissection harder. So here you see getting into the submucosal plane, and this is very different than the snare polypectomy. You're getting into the right plane with the help of the submucosal elevation and solution, and you recognize every tissue. Here you recognize at the base the muscular layers, and you stay away from it. You try not to obviously risk it or perforate it, and it's a beautiful plane once you get into that. And the tip of your knife is 1.2 millimeters. Everything is here magnified, but it's a very precise dissection. Same surgical principles apply. But it's at this point here, we were kind of stuck. You know, we use gravity, but in this case, patient was under anesthesia, we couldn't. So what we did is deinsufflated the luminal area, and then clip the edge of the polyp to the opposite wall of the colon and re-insufflated it, and that helped us to bring the polyp edge up just with the help of the CO2 and clipping it to the opposite wall. And here you will see that facilitated, as you see here, it's very nicely attached, and you see this plane where we need to go. And then, of course, then it's very important to not to touch too much to the polyp so you don't make it fall again.
1 minute.
Okay.
Pretty cool, Emery.
Good. So we'll proceed here. And see, this is completely then removed, and the clip is then at some point came off, but the weight and heaviness helped us to continue the dissection, and it's a fairly large area, about 6, and you may get some weak spots, and you can just clip them afterwards. And this was the resection site. And this is the polyp. It's about 5.5 centimeters in block. This is the dilumen platform, which you can use same techniques. And I'm going to have Sam talk about that a little bit later. But same retraction we used using the clipping the edge to the balloon. And Sam's going to explain this approach to you. I think in his talk, but that's a very similar balloon-assisted resection technique. And then there's another platform now, which I will finish with that, and the luminal tissue resection system, which delivers, like you see here, a cage, and then there's instruments and graspers that can help you like this to grasp an edge, traction and counter-traction principles are applied endoluminally. The limits are 45 centimeters in the colon that you can go up. Just a few here. I'm going to fast forward here. You'll see just the concept, and then we'll stop here. You see how outside the initial cut is made, and then the retraction is applied, and then the cutting, and on the left upper hand, you see the outside view. It's, of course, done in the operating room, and the dissection is completed this way. So in conclusion, I want to say morphology dictates the management, and retraction is the key. Thank you very much for your attention.
Stay there for a second. Emery, any burning questions for Dr. Gorgon regarding technique? I think the important part is imaging. And do you just use narrowband imaging right now? Do you use chroma endoscopy? What are you doing?
I don't routinely use it. If any concern, sometimes I have it available on my scope. There have been also done some studies comparing that with conventional high-definition scopes in this DNH. The results are all pretty similar between chroma endoscopy and regular high-definition scopes.
I think when you get to a large polyp greater than 3 centimeters, you should really look at the morphology and look at the PIT pattern and think about what the right thing is for the patient. All right, Emery, thanks very much.
You're welcome.